The podcast is also sponsored by my good friend Tiger at It's Tiger Music on Instagram at itztiger.music. You can find all his work on Spotify, SoundCloud, and iTunes. He does all the music and tracks for the Block Hash podcast. Go check him out. Also, don't forget to check out Block Hash Plus on Patreon. This is something that's new, where you can learn more about trading, technical analysis, and charting, all for the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. That's pretty damn cheap. Sign up at patreon.com/blockhash. And last but definitely not least, Blockhash is offering consulting for all your blockchain needs. Buying, exchanging, selling, safe storage, tokenization, NFT creation, point of sale, you name it. We can help you. Go to blockhashpodcast.com/consulting and let's talk. What's up, guys? It is Wednesday, May 12th, episode 130. Today I have Jeremy Almond, CEO of Paystand. Paystand is trying to create a more open financial system starting with B2B payments. You'll learn how Paystand helps eliminate fees, digitize the cash cycle, and make payments the easiest part of running a business. And so with that said, be sure to subscribe and share this episode with somebody that you think would like to learn more about blockchain, Jeremy Almond, and everything that Paystand can do. Enjoy. Awesome, Jeremy. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Yeah, man, I'm just feeling good. It's good to be on the cast with you and talk about some stuff I think we're both excited about, man. So should be fun.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here and to dive into Paystand and a little bit about blockchain. Before we, you know, do that, tell me a little bit about yourself and your background. I'm curious, like, where you came from, how you kind of like got into the space, what got you interested, what got you going towards Paystand. So yeah, give me a little bit of that.
Yeah. I would not have expected when I was a kid that I'd end up spending my career in B2B finance, but sometimes like the world just kind of works in a certain way. I thought I wanted to be an astronaut, I suppose.
An astronaut.
Yeah. Wouldn't that have been cool? But you know what? I hear there's a correlation between folks who do payment companies and rocket ships. So you never know. You never know.
Well, there's a correlation between blockchain and astronauts in terms of going to the moon. So, I mean,
that's true too. That's true. Diamond hands. Let's see. So I guess my journey into this space, I've been in tech for about 20 years. First 10 years of my career was in kind of high growth startups that got fairly big. And my focus was mostly on the enterprise space. So companies that basically built the equipment that became, you know, the cell phones that we use today. And one of the things in the first 10 years I experienced, which is what our customers experience, is like the big enterprise companies are trying to deal with becoming more digital, their DNA more digital. So they would, you know, invest in cloud. So super, super kind of traditional stuff, right? So think Salesforce and ERPs and that sort of thing. So I spent a bunch of time in that space. And what was always fascinating to me was the big companies would invest all this, you know, time, energy, and effort and money into finance or in every other part of the business, but not the finance aspect. So it probably is surprising, but the vast majority of commercial payments in the US are still done through paper checks. So there was a big opportunity, a big problem that solved that I was a customer of, that I experienced. I worked with a bunch of ERP companies, worked with a bunch of commerce companies, et cetera. But quite honestly, I wouldn't have started Paystand if it was just that. So probably this, you know, everybody has a pivot point in how they go down the rabbit hole in blockchain. So for me, you know, very early on in 2008, my family, it's a much longer story, but my family was one of the many millions of Americans who was affected by the financial crisis. They lost their home. I was in between tech companies at the time. And so I just decided to go back and do my grad research on why were banks too big to fail? What were the systematic problems with commercial banking back then? Because it turns out that the financial crisis back then was really a commercial banking problem. And when you study it, you just realize that there's a bunch of things wrong with banking, and especially commercial banking. And the consumer banking stuff is pretty sexy, but the commercial banking is actually critical to our economy, and less folks were focused on that. And so while I was doing, you know, my master's thesis, I, you know, this is maybe 2009, 2010. I just, you know, went down the rabbit hole in crypto. So, you know, I was very, very early involved in, you know, sort of helping with some of the early dev work in the Bitcoin space. And what I realized out of a few things was a lot of innovation was going to happen in the consumer side of let's call it open finance. But I didn't see at the time much folks focused on the B2B side of open finance, and mm-hmm. arguably it's at least as important. And so, you know, we started PayStand a while ago now. 2013 is when we started working on the business. It's been you know, sort of live in market for quite a few years now, to basically build transformation in the B2B side of commercial finance. And so PayStand basically today is a B2B payment network. So you can imagine what Venmo does for consumer payments. Mm-hmm. We do for commercial payments. And we use, you know, sort of open finance to basically transform how that process is done. It's a very, very compelling value proposition for large companies that were effectively, you know, not using digital, and they were using paper checks, or they were just dealing with massive fees from banks. And we make that all go away. It's a huge ROI for our customers. And then the kind of behind the scenes secret sauce is, you know, I guess we're one of the largest commercial blockchains in terms of volume today. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is it primarily US based? Are you guys in other jurisdictions as well?
Yeah. Today, our main focus has been locally, being in the US. So just to give you some stats, there's about $18 trillion in commercial payments today. About half of that commercial payment volume is still done over paper checks. The vast, vast majority, somewhere between 80 and 90%, depending on which analyst you look at, is doing some kind of legacy payment, meaning a wire or a card or some other thing that was built before the internet. And so that's a problem for our customer class because, you know, if you think about it, a commercial payment between two big companies, these are large payments with companies that have very, very low risk that have signed contracts, signed invoices, you know. So the notion that the payment flow is both not modern, meaning, you know, it might be a manual process, or it's going through some banking system that's going to charge them a bunch of fees, doesn't make a lot of sense. So we come in and we just bring, you know, a bunch of transformation and ultimately a bunch of money back on the table for those customers. So,
yeah. Can you give me an example of like a B2B type of payment or transaction that's like typical that you guys help with?
Yeah. So, you know, if you look at, let's say, in the last year, you know, healthcare supply chain is a big deal, right? You know, how does the manufacturers of PPE and masks, you know, get down to the wholesaler and the distributor, and then how do those get to, you know, the hospitals and the retail folks so that we can buy it? And if you remember, there's a big shortage, right? And so that's because the supply chain's not terribly efficient. Part of that is because, you know, payments are not terribly efficient in the supply chain. What we do is basically three things. We say no paper, no fees, and an open industry. The first is basically a cashless process. So we help digitize the payment flow. So when somebody moves goods and services, so let's say, you know, a big bulk order of masks to a wholesaler from the manufacturer, we help them actually get paid when the movement of the money happens. So when a truck delivers, you know, those goods, you know, those things are actually in digital systems. But the money movement is actually like disconnected from it. One, we just help that process be kind of seamless. So maybe the analog way to think of it is, you know, when you walk out of an Uber, you know, money just kind of magically moves. It's sort of self-driving, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to exchange hands anymore. We do that, you know, for, you know, these supply chain issues. The second thing that happens is we call this payments as a service, which is normally when that money moves, there'll be a fee associated to it. So think a wire fee or a credit card fee. The problem is, you know, for a $100,000 payment, let's say they're, you know, buying $100,000 worth of masks, you know, can you imagine Visa charging 3% on a $100,000 invoice for masks, right, between a manufacturer and a, you know, distributor? It doesn't make any sense. So what we do is we own our own network. And when the money moves over the network, there's no fees whatsoever for the commercial companies. And so that means instead of paying, you know, Visa, let's say $3,000 to move ones and zeros between banks, there's no cost associated to it on the fee side for the supply chain. So they can move the money instantly, they can move the money automatically, and they move the money without fees. So it's a big deal for the CFOs.
Right. How do you guys make this more seamless for these companies? You guys are leveraging blockchain for this, correct?
We are, but the key thing, you know, we've been in the space for a long time, sort of under the radar, is, you know, what we've learned, you know, over many years is, you know, our class of customers, they want the innovation, right, of what I would consider as open financial infrastructure, so blockchain and DeFi, but they want it in, you know, dollar denominated, you know, currency, right? And so the key for us is basically the experience for the customer is as if they were just running over a traditional banking system, banking infrastructure. It's just how we move the money is different. And so we kind of say it this way to the enterprise, blockchain is basically the new cloud. So for an enterprise customer, you know, companies like Salesforce were these big innovations for them where an enterprise customer doesn't care that cloud, you know, the technology of cloud. What the enterprise customer cares about is cloud was basically creating like better, cheaper, faster, more efficient software for them. And what we basically do is we just use basically the blockchain to create better, cheaper, faster sort of experience for the customer in terms of the money movement side.
Okay, got it. What do you mentioned open finance. Like, what are your thoughts on things like DeFi? Because they're really taking over the space right now, especially making a big wave in finance and in the blockchain world, obviously, and becoming this really big niche. And they're disrupting so many different centralized financial services, and in a good way. I'm curious what your thoughts might be on that.
Yeah, you know, I think just like we, you know, we looked many, many years ago as like, you know, Coinbase had a recent IPO. Payments was one of the first, you know, sort of instruments with digital currency and crypto in general, mostly on the consumer side. And we said, how do you take the best of that and apply it to the B2B side? You know, I'd say in our company is fairly far in that maturing process. So, you know, we're doing billions of dollars today. It's created an enormous amount of value for customers. I look at DeFi very similarly, which is DeFi, and if you look at the space right now, is mostly a leading edge consumer-ish type of experience. So, you know, let's take the one that most people would think about is something like a Compound, you know, where you're getting, you know, sort of yield, right? That's a really cool thing. On the consumer side, it's very frontier. But you'd argue, what's the equivalent version on the commercial side, right? You know, you have big treasury companies, big, you know, CFOs that are looking at their treasury right now and going, how do I get yield, right, when all this money's sitting on the balance sheet? Or, you know, what is the way to hedge against risk, right, in the interest? So a lot of things that I think consumers have been looking at in both crypto and DeFi for the last, I don't know, 5, 7, 8 years, B2B is starting to look at. And so I think Paystan's kind of lens of the world is payments first, right? Because, you know, for the CFO, our class of customers, you know, revenue is the lifeblood of a company, right? And so first, you know, we help them enable transformation on the revenue side. But then once you do, open financial infrastructure, let's call it the stack of the CFO, there's a bunch of other really, really powerful things that I would consider as frontier right now in DeFi and OpenFi in general. But we fundamentally in the company has made a bet that it will be, you know, sort of the par for the course in the long run. So.
Yeah. How does that, cause I know, you know, DeFi is very like P2P, you know, person to person, in a lot of ways is for the, average retail customer, not necessarily a commercial customer. Like, is there an angle for, cause you mentioned that a minute ago, like an angle for a commercial enterprise or business to, leverage DeFi a little bit more so, like maybe from a loan perspective or from a liquidity perspective? I'm sure there's a lot of interesting angles.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's the really exciting thing. You know, the way I would say our product team looks at this is take every financial service that's known to man right now, and you can map it both on the consumer side, but in our world, in the commercial side, and go most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, you know, having open decentralized infrastructure actually just makes the process more efficient. So, you know, I think you could actually look at all the fintech that's happening today in my world. And most of the fintech is actually on traditional rails. So most of these big companies you hear about, whether it's, you know, Stripe or Plaid or a bunch of them, they're still operating under existing infrastructure. You can imagine a world not far off from now where you replace all of that, you know, with much more efficient, already built smart contract infrastructure. Because the reality is, you know, what many of those companies, they, you know, it's very trite at this point. What they've spent 40,000, you know, lines of code on, you can do in 40, right? And mm-hmm. and oftentimes in smart contracts. So you're right. Lending is an example of it. But there are many, many examples, and you can just kind of go down the CFO's stack there. So I think we're really, really, really early, and it's extremely exciting. So.
Gotcha. In terms of your customers, is it like big cap companies, or can like a smaller SME or mom and pop shop take advantage of PayStand as well? Or like, who's it really geared towards?
Yeah, for us, it's usually like mid-market companies and small enterprise generally. You know, and partly it's because we don't deal with small businesses, mostly because, you know, if you think about what our value prop does, when money becomes just software, you know, you kind of think about, okay, money should be instant, money should be automatic, and money should be a, you know, sort of little fee structure from the banks. The larger the company, the more that matters, right? Like time is money, like the faster the money flows in the corporate world, that's something called DSO, which is basically how long it takes you to track your revenue down. So, you know, big CFOs spend a lot of time, energy, and effort to go get their revenue or get their collections. And so getting that faster is actually a very important thing. If you're too small, that doesn't matter too much. Same thing on the automation side. So what happens is, you know, in our world, you know, especially post COVID, you know, oftentimes like these big companies, they'd send everybody to work from home, but they actually had like their finance staff actually go back to the office mm-hmm. to just basically collect checks and kind of do the printing. Because if you don't do that part, like the business doesn't keep operating. And so the bigger the company, the more that matters. And so us being able to make that entirely automatic is a really big deal. And then if you just go back to the fee structure, so the cost that, whether it's a bank and wire fees or Visa charging you or otherwise, the larger you get, the more that cost actually becomes really annoying. You know, I just got my overpriced latte a minute ago. And, mm-hmm. You know, if somebody like Square and Visa charges 3% to a merchant on a $5 cup of coffee, you know, it's annoying, but it's maybe reasonable value exchange. It's an entirely different thing for $100 million company or a billion dollar company when, you know, these are very, very large transactions that are really well known. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And fees like that on a multi-million-dollar transaction, you know, that's a lot of money too. So, I mean, companies like little changes and stuff like that make a huge difference down the line. It could be a difference between millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, I think from there's a lot of, I think, really cool blockchain companies. You know, we're a very much under the radar kind of meat and potato company. You know, in our view is, you know, you basically had to have a Google kind of help usher in, you know, the wave of the internet. But you also had a Salesforce that said, how does that apply to the enterprise? And, you know, our view is there will be a company that's of large size and scale that gets commercially successful, you know, the B2B version of OpenFi and DeFi. And so, you know, we're inning two or inning three in that game. So,
yeah, that's what you guys hoping to become, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. If it's not us, it'll be somebody, right? And what I see right now is in the space in general, you have a bifurcation. So you have like a lot of really cool, like, next gen things that are going on in crypto and DeFi and blockchain in general, mostly on the consumer side. And then you have all these fintech companies that have huge amount of valuation, huge amount of sort of value increase, but they're using legacy infrastructure. And so we just believe that open financial infrastructure is the wave. And so we've built our company there first. And we think that the key is to be able to take the technology innovation and apply it to maybe more normal commercial language that, you know, an insurance company or a manufacturing company, you know, in the middle of Ohio, you know, recognize. Because at the end of the day, all they want is their revenue faster, cheaper, and more efficiently. And right. How we make those rails better and remove, you know, sort of the stakeholders, you know, I think that's more kind of the philosophy stuff. But
yeah, for example, like if my business wanted to use it, and let's say I had a bunch of logistics to handle, And I think this would make, you know, things more seamless, maybe a little bit cheaper down the line, or just, you know, it makes more sense. Do you have to find a company that's already using PayStand or will accept PayStand? Like, is that like a barrier, or is it something that, you know, integrates with another system, or what kind of barriers exist if someone wanted to jump into it?
Yeah. So in general, we work with companies that have already, you know, basically implemented cloud ERP or CRM. So think of like the NetSuite, the Salesforces of the world, the Sage Intacct. So we work really closely with those folks, you know, Oracle and otherwise. And we're probably the largest provider on the sort of AR and finance side there. So that's already like, if you're in that space, it's very, very easy. In general, though, what I would say is more the philosophy for us is, again, a barrier that we've seen, you know, is if everybody's living in like a crypto DeFi world, that's great. But the reality is, you know, 99% of corporations don't live there yet. And so what you have to do is you have to meet them where they're at. And the analogy I would maybe give is, you know, our office was the original office of Netflix. And, you know, I think what we're trying to do is with payments as a service is basically, you know, take that subscription kind of software concept that Netflix and Spotify do on the music and media side and apply it to money. And, you know, in the early days of Netflix, they didn't necessarily, you know, have everyone in the planet have digital, high def, you know, fast internet right into their, you know, living room. And because of that, you know, they had to kind of make it accessible for folks, you know, that were basically going to Blockbuster. And so how did they transition people from DVD to like, you know, entirely internet enabled media? What they did was they basically, I don't know how many people remember this, but they shipped a lot of these red envelopes. And what was fascinating about it was kind of like a half step, right? It was sort of like, hey, you know, when we deliver red envelopes in the mail, it's kind of like you will get in the long run. You get unlimited access to media. It's not like you have to go to Blockbuster and drive there anymore. So it's faster. The business model is cheaper. You can get all you can eat as fast as the mail moves. You know, and then at some point people were using the red envelopes and they just said, well, I just rather hit, you know, stream now. And the product experience for us is kind of like that, where we say, look, you as a customer, your customers downstream don't have to use PayStand. You know, we have hundreds of thousands of businesses that do use PayStand in our network, but even if you don't, you can just pay us however you're going to normally pay. And then what PayStand will do is we'll take on all of your receivables, all of your, you know, invoicing process, all of this sort of workflow. And then over time, your customers will move from the DVD, you know, in the mail, which is better than the DVD at the, you know, Blockbuster. But then over time, they'll move to entirely digital experience. And right. Because it's just better. Everybody likes it, right? And so
exactly.
That removes the barrier. So, and I think that's one of the reasons why we've grown so fast, you know, so.
You know, what's so interesting about that, using, you know, Blockbuster and Netflix as an example, is the fact that everyone used to enjoy going to Blockbuster. Like, it wasn't like a depressing experience. People liked going down the aisles and, you know, browsing for something and coming back and dropping it off. Like, it was like an experience, especially for me as a kid growing up. Mm-hmm. What was interesting though with Netflix is, once they went the streaming route and the internet got good enough that you could do that with enough bandwidth to actually make it practical, you know, it was the efficiency in your daily life that trumps the dopamine kick that you get from actually going to Blockbuster. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong when they look at companies and tech and going into the future. It's always like, you know, they love what they have right now and they enjoy it. And like we all do, but you know, there's always something that's just more efficient. And it doesn't matter if you like it or not at the time. It's, you know, if it's more efficient, it's more practical, it's going to win out in the end, just because it makes life easier. So I just a point I wanted to make, so many people just, you know, I think they gloss over that, especially in tech. And I see it all the time with different companies. And you just go down the list all day on it. But no, yeah. What you're saying makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the psychology of all this, right? Especially a business who's going to be a rational buyer, you know, it's either because of cost or efficiency generally, and you know, the cost is fascinating. If you look at the Netflix model, they had this very early days. One of their slogans was like no late fees. So, cause you're right. The experience was good until the experience was bad. Right. And the moment you sort of start piling up this cost, and the equivalent kind of cost structure I think about is my favorite bill on the planet I pay is Spotify. Right. Because I kind of look at it and go, wow, I get like unlimited access to this. This was like a thing that didn't exist before. And now, you know, I can get everything. And so there's this like entirely new value. And then you go to the efficiency side, like you're talking about, and you know, you say the same thing, which is, yes, the dopamine, there was a dopamine replacement, not just a loss of dopamine by going into the Blockbuster experience, but going, hey, the new experience is actually like, in the Netflix case, it's actually binge watching, right? It's like, I can just keep doing it over and over and over again. So it's more efficient in that way. And so, you know, I think the key thing for blockchain companies in general is to look at these kind of two areas and go, you know, how does the efficiency actually get better, right? In our case, it's kind of self-driving money. It's where finance people were doing stuff before that they don't have to do anymore. And that is kind of the definition of smart contracts, actually. It's really fascinating. Like smart contracts literally by definition are defining like a financial instrument that can auto-execute, which is just stuff humans don't need to be doing anyways. And then the cost structure is the same thing, right? So you can go, oh, wow, you know, there's a bunch of layers within, you know, financial infrastructure that just don't need to exist anymore. And all of that, I think Amazon says, you know, what is your margin, right, is my opportunity. So it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, financial layers and infrastructure that don't really need to exist anymore or that are becoming irrelevant very slowly, you know, the banks are starting to kind of fit into that category. I mean, hell, put blockchain aside, the tech companies are killing banking alone. Like you can have a far better experience banking through the Cash App or Apple's credit card or, you know, one of these other, you know, smaller banks owned by a tech company than you can going to Bank of America or Wells Fargo these days. It's just a headache. But do you think that, you know, can you imagine a future without banks at all? Like where it is completely decentralized or maybe, you know, partly owned by the tech companies and it's just a small part of a different business, or because it just feels like traditional finance is starting to slowly fizzle away and there's just so many other options now.
Yeah. I on the commercial side, I would say I'm not quite as bullish that like, you know, DeFi eats banks entirely. What I would say is people misinterpret what banks are actually good at. And I think people kind of think banks like are tech companies and they're not. You know, banks are kind of regulatory and trust instruments. And especially on the B2B or commercial side, you actually need regulatory and trust instruments. But that's kind of where it ends, right? And so what tech's doing is, I would say the question tech should be asking is, not so much like does B2B need banks, but what's the point of the networks now? Like, you know, when does this all become open standards, right? And then what can, you know, the financial players, whether it's a bank or whether it's a, you know, provider like us, when do those companies, how do they think about the network where there's a bunch of stuff in the middle? So let me give you an example of where I think both a tech company and a bank could benefit from blockchain, where basically today it's just risk and cost. So a friend of mine is the CIO of a bank, and they have commercial customers. And one of the things that he was telling me the story is, the way banks will manage like, you know, security process on a large payment is like a manual checksum. So they'll say, you know, if a payment's over, I don't know, $10 million, we actually like manually review, you know, as the payment goes. So they were doing this process one day. And what they find is a company that they normally process the payments for over a wire, basically the account number seemed off. And when they unwinded it and they contacted the companies, what they found out was the companies got hacked, but not hacked in like a high profile way, like the bank got hacked or, the financial system got hacked, but actually it was just, you know, an unsuspecting person in the finance team's email got hacked and phished. And so somebody changed an invoice number because the way the banking system works today is the wires or the ACH numbers are just like literally the numbers that are sitting on your checkbooks. And so somebody just changed one of those numbers in the invoice. And so what ends up happening was a payment, a $10 million payment, literally goes not to the company it was supposed to go, but actually to, you know, an account in the Caymans or whatever. And because a bank system is manual, like literally it was 5 days later before somebody actually was like going through the books to check it off, and found out that that payment was going to a place that it doesn't normally go to. The happy ending to the story was they were actually able to go and kind of track it down, and the hacker hadn't actually came in and gone and collected and withdrawn the money yet. And so they were able to call it back, but had they not, you know, that money would have been gone. And arguably if it would have sat there another couple of days, it could have or should have been gone. And so, you know, I think, you know, one of the products that we offer kind of freely and openly to, you know, the system today is something we call Assurity. And what Assurity does is a blockchain product that basically uses the same auditing and validation process that we use for our own blockchain network. And we open it up for everyone. And so why is this important? Because if that would have happened either on our own network or somebody using our Assurity product, there would be validation to ensure that somebody can't change records like that. And so that would have never happened. And not only could that not happen, you know, externally, somebody hacking, but internally, you know, sometimes you have these cases like Enron and other cases where there's massive amounts of fraud that will happen in the system, because you have an internal person who's basically a bad actor and changes a number somewhere and lots of downstream things happen. And today, the only way we deal with that is either humans, which are very, very fallible, or, you know, you throw like these technology layers on top that are very, very inefficient. And so, you know, we think of like blockchain as one way that can sort of enforce a higher degree like of authority, assurity, and truth. You know, and so that doesn't make that bank go away per se, but it certainly makes the process more efficient. And if the process is more efficient, you need a lot less of the layers and you need a lot less of the cost. So,
right. That's a good example. What's next with PayStandard? What's on the roadmap? Like, what do you have plans for 2021? How do you guys want to expand? Do you have announcements you guys have coming up or important deadlines? What should people be aware of?
Yeah, so I think, you know, PayStand's arguably the fastest growing B2B payment company on the planet right now. We've been mostly focused domestically, and we've been mostly focused on a couple key, you know, sort of worlds, you know, namely we work with Oracle NetSuite really closely. We work with Sage Intacct really closely. We work with Salesforce really closely. You know, one of the things we're doing this year is expanding. So our companies are growing globally. So we're expanding globally. So there's more regions that we'll start working with in Europe and LATAM, which is exciting. I think another area that we have a new product that we've started at the beta level that, you know, we'll have more announcements around is we mostly focus on accounts receivable, meaning getting your revenue. But we have a product that's is a really compelling corporate card for expenses. It's in early access right now. What's really unique about it is while the corporate card can be used over traditional payment rails, so it looks like and acts like a MasterCard, when the customers pay over customer to customer, it doesn't go over the Visa or MasterCard rails, but it goes over the blockchain. And so unlike every other card on the planet, that will actually charge the receiver fees, our card will actually do smart routing and won't charge any fees at all. And so that's a really, really compelling product that's got expense management and that sort of thing. So we're really excited about that. And then we're really excited about some DeFi stuff that we'll probably announce later in the year. So,
yeah, do you have any like tax software built into it, like for itemizing like certain types of purchases? Because I know there's a lot of expenses, you know, from tax purposes that play into using a payment service like this when they're not using like a good old credit card or debit card. Like, do you guys have stuff built in for that to help, you know, your customer when they're doing B2B transactions?
Yeah, I mean, so the thing that's fascinating about B2B is that when you're a larger company, you know, the context I would give here is actually the CFO is much more like akin to a crypto kid than you'd ever think. And this is kind of a funny thought, but like, you know, if I was to ask a normal person, like, you know, how much money do you have? What would happen is a normal person would basically look at their bank account and they would tell you what's the number that the bank account says. If you ask a CFO of like a company of any real size, how much money does the company have? They actually think about money as software already. Because what they do is they all have financial software. Any material company has, you know, a NetSuite or an Oracle or whatever. And they do a balance sheet report. They literally pull up a report. The report's not talking about the money in the bank account. The report is like looking at all their assets that are kind of under management. Why that's important is companies of that size and scale, they've already invested in a bunch of that financial infrastructure. They generally have partners on the tax side that connect into that infrastructure. And so, you know, there's lots of tax companies, Avalara is an example. There's lots of tax companies that connect into those pieces. What doesn't work today is actually stitching the money movement together. So what happens is all that stuff lives in the cloud somewhere. And then all the money movement is disassociated to it all. And so our view of the world is basically, you know, you have open kind of open systems of record, open ERPs so that you can use APIs to access all this. You have open banking, right? You can see all the information in real time. And then you have open finance, which is sort of decentralized blockchain infrastructure that stitches it all together, that says, hey, look, that info is already mapped somewhere. It's mapped in your tax software. It's mapped in your accounting software. It's mapped in your general ledger. And as the money move map, a smart contract should be able to say, here's what's happening along the way. And we're going to assert that nothing's changed or nothing's gone off awry. So that's, to me, one of the more compelling opportunities of the blockchain is actually to stitch a lot of these systems together that aren't stitched together today. So,
okay, got it. You also mentioned Latin America too. Do you guys plan on doing stuff down here? Like, I'm based in Colombia and the banking system fucking sucks. It'd be awesome to have something like Paystan down here.
Yeah, we, so one of the things, you know, so part of my personal background, I didn't sell too much of my story, but my mother's side is from Mexico originally, immigrated right before I was born. I have a strong affinity to LATAM in general. We have about half our company is based in Mexico today. We power actually one of the larger commercial banks. We have a cool project down in Mexico. I think one of the areas we're looking at LATAM in particular is the financial infrastructure is very far behind. A lot of the companies don't even have, you know, I'm talking about cloud sort of software, cloud accounting software, like a lot of that's not even deployed yet. We're looking at a lot of the financial infrastructure stakeholders to help get it up to speed. So whereas in the US, there's a lot of maturity in everything except for the financial money movement. In LATAM, what's actually is cloud needs to catch up. The financial infrastructure needs to catch up. And so we're spending a bit more time there working with sort of the financial institutions and some of the other folks to get it there. What's cool is that market's actually growing faster, arguably than the US is. So I think mobile phones basically, you know, leapfrogged a generation in Asia. I think something similar that's happening in Africa and LATAM on the finance side. So,
yeah, it's growing really fast. And there's some tech that's, you know, leapfrogged because, you know, they're a little far behind. But yeah, it's growing really fast. I believe Paystan would do really well down here. I'd use it all the time. Jeremy, thanks for taking the time to come on and, you know, talk about Paystan and DeFi finance, open finance, traditional finance all around. Really appreciate it. Fun talk.
Brandon, appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on, man. And enjoy beautiful Colombia. It's one of my favorite places on the planet, brother.
I will. It's actually a little cloudy today, but I'll enjoy it.
Killer. All right. Thanks, brother. Cheers.